Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, Milo.
All right. Well, I have a question for the audience, the cat people specifically in our audience, the cat lovers. I'm talking to you and Scott. I'm also talking to you as a cat lover. Here's a question, though. Biscuit, your lovable butterscotch kitty, is completely relaxed. He's asleep. He's sitting on your lap, perhaps. And then he sits straight up and he locks eyes into a corner of the room where there is plainly nothing happening.
Yes, he definitely does that. Oh. Or he'll stare at the top of a door frame like there's a meeting up there that I wasn't invited
What's
to.
What's that about?
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if he can hear insects walking on the wall, even the smallest ones, like mosquitoes.
Oh, well, that's a good question. I don't know, but I often think it could be something in the wall, but you know, people often say that, but I've been around, you know, in houses where, they don't have mice. There's no pack rats in the walls.
Right.
But suddenly they'll be fixated on a spot on the wall. And, you know, so that's pretty common. I think we've all kind of seen that. Okay. So here's what we all do next, I think, if you see that, is you then look to where they're looking. And you and I probably just see a wall. And then we go back to what we were doing.
Right, because the alternative to that is admitting that your cat might know something that you don't.
Right, well,
or that something's there that you can't see, basically.
Well, I always wished I could see what they're seeing, just from the animal's perspective, you know, just even the colored tones, you know, they say are different because their eyes are set up differently. And just how do they see things?
Yes.
And what do they see and how do they see it when they're looking at something that we can't see as humans? So that's always fascinated me. And then, of course, after we're done telling the story here, or you are, I'm going to bring up the dog story again of your dog, Lou, seeing something, which was a completely different thing.
I think
you're in denial, which is part of what we're talking about here tonight.
Yeah.
When something's kind of unmistakable. But that's the premise for tonight's story. And tonight's writer, Amy, didn't get to go back to what she was doing. She was a night shift worker, or still is, lives alone with a cat named Milo. And Milo is no ordinary house cat. Milo is, as Amy explains, started out as a barn cat, then jumped in her semi-truck one day and rode out the miles with her for 7 years.
Yeah, trucker
Love
cat.
Love it.
A female trucker cat named Milo, by the way, which she talks about. 9 pounds, but afraid of nothing, and decided that tractor trailer was hers to be in charge of.
I see a 80s TV sitcom starting, something like BJ and the Bear. Remember that? Where?
Oh, BJ and the Bear.
Yeah, he had a chimp as his as a co-driver partner. So, but a cat would be just as fine.
And less likely to eat your face.
When you die, who? No, well, you know, adult chimps will rip your face off and they go for your hands and your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Weirdly. But this is what makes this story unique here is when you will read the story, what we find out is that Milo the cat ran toward a strange sound rather than running away from it. And, you know, that's completely in character for, at least for Milo. Most animals, they get freaked out, and it's like, you're on your own, sorry. Like, I'll come back in a few days. But, you know, when I tell you that she came tearing back with her tail puffed, her eyes huge, that's what makes this a dead letter.
Yeah, and that's only the first of two nights that Milo and Amy, her owner, had to turn to each other and confirm something was up. You know, yes, I heard that too. Or the second time.
Yes, confirmation. Yes, I saw that too. And I love that part of the story because there's an animal-human connection that's very real and no words need to be spoken, just a look. Like, huh? Huh?
That's right.
I'm not going crazy. You're not going crazy, right? We saw that. Well, tonight, Scott is reading this one, and it might be the rare letter where the most reliable witness in the house has four legs and they're furry. So, Scott, please, if you will, go ahead.
Most of us have had a pet that suddenly just stares at a spot in a room and we can't figure out what they're looking at. Animals can see and hear things that people just can't. Well, this is about the time that my cat and I both saw and heard something that neither one of us could explain. First, I think we need to do a little backstory. My cat Milo used to be a barn cat, then, on her own, decided that she wanted to start riding in my semi-truck. She jumped up in my truck one day, stowed away, and then rode with me over the road for 7 years. In that time, she became my little protector. She's not a very big cat, only about 9 pounds, but she wasn't afraid of anything and always thought it was her job to protect the truck. So she's not a scaredy cat at all. And then you need a little backstory about our house. We live in a 100-year-old limestone two-story house with 18-inch thick walls, so you can't really hear anything outside. And if you do, it's very muffled. It's kind of like living in a castle or a cave. The stone for this house was quarried on our property out of a creek that runs around three sides of it. There's also at least one natural spring on the property. We don't know any history about it. We don't know that anything ever happened here of note. Just that it's a neat old house. There are woods around the perimeter of the property, roughly 10 acres, and it was built in 1926. That's a little bit of backstory about our house and Miss Milo. Yes, Milo is a female, don't ask. She came to me with that name. There were a couple of times when Milo and I had to verify to each other that yes, I heard that too, or yes, I saw that too. The first time something unusual happened, I was sitting on my bed working on the computer, and Milo was laying on the end of the bed with me. This was very late at night. I worked the night shift, so that's just my schedule. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning and Milo was sound asleep. I was doing some type of work on my computer and suddenly there was a very loud screeching sound. It sounded like it was coming from down the hall out of another room. I don't even know how to describe what the screeching sounded like. It was kind of how you think a pterodactyl would scream. Milo jumped off the bed and ran out of the room and down the hall, being the little protector she is. She was going to confront whatever had made that noise. Within seconds, Milo came tearing back into the room, her tail puffed up and her eyes huge. She came to a screeching halt in the center of the room, turned and faced the door, and then looked over her shoulder at me like, "Did you hear that?" I honestly had no response. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what she saw to send her running back into the room like something was after her. We were the only ones home. There was no one else in the house. Should I have gone down the hall to investigate, to see what made that noise? Should we have evacuated the house? I'm not sure what the correct answer to that was. But what I did was calmly get up off the bed, close the door, and go sit back down on the bed. My little protector proceeded to stare at me like I had lost my mind, and looked at the door, and then looked back at me like, "Aren't you gonna do something about that?" I told her, "Yes, I heard that too, and I think we'll stay in here with the door closed and pretend it didn't happen." Denial seemed like the best choice at the time. The second time we had something unexplainable happen was kind of the same scenario. We were both in our room, sitting on the bed. I was working on the computer, and this time Milo was laying on my lap, between me and the computer. It was nice and quiet. Milo was asleep, and all of a sudden, for no reason, Milo jumps up and runs over to the side of the bed and stares back at my lap. I look down at the same time, and a dark shape, about the size of a small pencil box, about 2 inches wide and about 8 inches long, drifted from behind me over the spot where Milo had been laying, across the corner of my computer, over my legs, across the bed, and disappeared off the end of the bed. Milo and I both watched it travel across the bed. Milo looked at where the shape went and then looked at me, like, "Did you see that?" I said, "Yes, I saw it too," with no explanation of what it could have been. Like the last time, it was about 2 a.m. I wasn't sure what the correct response that time was either. I sat there for a few more minutes. Milo slowly walked back over to me and laid back down in her spot. We both stared at the corner of the bed, and I guess we both decided nothing else was going to happen. We just went back to what we were doing, with just a little bit of an uneasy feeling the rest of the night. Those are the only two experiences that I can remember that we've ever had. Definitely the only two me and Milo have had together. Yes, it's an old house, and the house pops and creaks and makes noises, and it sounds like something is walking in the hall occasionally, but I'm pretty sure that's just the house settling. We do get phantom smells. Every once in a while, the back door smells like cigarette smoke. We don't smoke, but the house has old smells, and maybe some phantom smell is drifting out from the insulation. Animals do make noises outside, but you can tell when they're outside because they sound muffled. They don't sound like they're in the next room. Could something have been sitting on the roof that was extra loud? I suppose that's possible, but I'm not sure that would have sent Milo scurrying back like something was chasing her back to the bedroom. I have no explanation for what sounded like a pterodactyl screaming in the other room, but it's never happened again. And I kind of hope it never does.
Something strange is going on in Blanket Fortiana tonight. We'll return in moments. Back to tonight's dead letter.
All right. First, two things about this story. One, I love that house. Two, I love Milo. We love Amy, too, as a listener. But what a great companion Milo is, just because, again, I like cats, mostly based on personality, though. And the ones that are super scaredy and you look at them, you give them a look and they freak out and jump on the counter and knock everything over. Don't have time for those kind of cats or any pets, really, that do that. But I do love cats with distinct and unique and interesting personalities. Like I've told the story of our family cat, Snooper. He was a black kitty.
Yes.
Because it reminded me a little bit about the story where just one day after owning him for years, my grandparents, and I think my dad was probably still living at home in high school, and they used to go out to the river for the summers. So my grandparents had built a cabin where they could work, and it was, you know, close enough that my grandfather could drive in to town for his day job at the time, but they would just stay out there at the river in a nice setting and, you know, for the whole summer. Then they'd pack up and go. And one day, one summer, Snooper just decides, you know what? I like it out here. I love the wilderness. I love the trees. I love to hunt rodents and birds. I'm fine. So he took off. And, you know, my grandfather returned every weekend for a few weeks just trying to find him. My uncle lived out there. My grandmother's brother lived out there year round. And they said, well, we can't find him. But if you see him, try and grab him and or just, you know, let us know if he's still alive. You know, we miss him, of course. We want him back home. And over the preceding winter, he said, yeah, I would see him on occasion. And, you know, he looked healthy. He was not skinny at all. He looked vibrant. He was very active, full of energy. And he continued to do this for another decade or so. But the amazing thing, which is a bit of an astonishing legend in itself, was that, of course, cats know when you're about to leave for a vacation, right? You're packing up the bag, you're packing up the car. They can sense that, and then they go sit in your suitcase. He knew when the family was getting ready to go back into town for the winter, and he would take off, like the day before, and he continued that. Now, the weird part is that he somehow knew before they were going to return. Like, he'd show up the day before and start hanging around the cabin.
Yeah.
And there was no sign, no human telltale sign for that. Like, how did he know the day before, every year before they returned?
How did they know when he came back if they weren't there?
Oh, my uncle saw him.
Oh, right. Okay, gotcha.
Now,
right.
My point here is that animals, of course, if you own them, you love them, you know that they have six senses in a sense. They perceive things that are maybe just on a psychic level. And so you have a cat here, Milo, who's just doing her cat thing, being very perceptive, but also you have a human where for both of them, it was undeniable. Something weird just happened.
Yeah, and this story is pretty great. And it has two components to it that I like. I mean, one of them is the auditory one, and then there's the visual one. And if you just had the auditory one, it wouldn't be the same kind of story. It would be, like as we said in the cold open, it wouldn't be a dead letter. But when you have more to it than that, or it certainly could still be it, by the way, if you have a story about hearing something crazy, do send it in. We'd love to hear it. In this case, with the screeching or whatever it was that they heard, they both heard it. It's a reaction between Amy and Milo that they both recognized that they heard it. But the other thing is that she is interacting with the cat, and that's confirming for her that whatever they're experiencing, both that they're hearing and later seeing, if Milo was seeing it too, then that tells her that it's not in her mind.
Yeah.
Even if she believes it's a paranormal event, it's not something controlling or tricking her senses, because Milo is seeing it as well. And I thought about this because, you know, how people talk about infrasound and this idea that infrasound causes you to see gray blobs. Because
the thing
that floated across the bed, in a lot of ways, that carries more weight for me, because the screeching, there's no telling what it could have been. And Amy even acknowledges this, but, you know, could have been a barn owl or something that got really close to the eaves of the house or something like that. I don't know. I'm just saying for the people that like to hear the mundane.
Sure.
Could have been something strange like that, but the black shape, like floating across the bed that both of them are looking at, that is way harder to explain away.
No. And quickly, what are some of the mundane, far-fetching explanations you came across?
Well, not for the visual stuff, but for the audible stuff, you know, a barn owl for sure. Okay. And they are very scary sounding when they screech. Sure. I've actually heard those in the wild in Bucks County. Also, a red fox vixen can make that noise, or a fisher can as well if she lives in a part of the country where those might be around. I mean, the foxes are everywhere. I have them in my yard in Greensboro, actually. I don't hear them screaming, though, thank God. I'm not sure. I do hear multiple cats, wild cats, feral cats yelling, screaming at each other, but that's a pretty recognizable sound.
Right.
There's no explanations I could find for what they saw. Again, coming back to infrasound, they say, well, you know, infrasound for certain people, and we've talked about infrasound ever since we covered Dyatlov Pass so long ago, but it's come up many other times since then, can cause certain people to see like gray, blobby shapes and also get a feeling of terror. But the thing to remember about that, and we know because we read the papers about this and looked at the experiments and everything, it's a very, very low percentage of humans that actually react to that. It does happen. It's a real thing.
Right.
I can't remember the percentage now. I've quoted it in the past. I feel like it's 10% or maybe even less.
You mean with infrasound?
Yeah, with infrasound.
Yeah, I think the highest amount, it's like
humans.
18 to low 20% that experience that. So it doesn't explain everything.
Right. So 1 in 5 people, as far as we know. So the next thing is, let's say, oh, there's an infrasound situation in this old house. It could, which they say could be generated by old HVAC systems or some other kind of thing if they get to a certain harmonic range. Even if that explained what Amy saw, it would not explain Milo. First of all, we don't have any infrasound research on cats. I know that. But I would think that if both of them were being exposed to infrasound, first of all, Amy would have to be the 1 in 5 in the 20% scenario who reacted to infrasound. Then Milo would also have to be in that category as a cat. And then they would both have to be seeing the same exact visual illusion brought about by the infrasound in the same spot floating across the bed, because Milo and Amy are looking at each other and looking at the thing, and they're tracking the same object, which suggests to me that it's a real world object floating across the bed, whatever that thing is. So I don't have like mundane for the screeching, maybe. Mundane for the thing they saw in the room, no, because also it could be a floater, which, you know, like you have in your eyes.
I have those.
I have them too.
Yeah.
And now that I'm talking about them, I'm going to start seeing them. I'm seeing them even as I'm talking to you now.
Right.
You ignore them the rest of the time. But they're generally not that big for most people. But also—
No, they're not. And they shift.
Two creatures are not going to have the same floater and see it floating across the room. There's not really an explanation for this, for what they saw. There's not any explanation I can think of.
Nothing that's remotely satisfying to my view.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, people will go with that because they're not really, they have no investment in this and don't want to know that this is possible. But look, I've gotten, you know, I do have floaters from when I remember researching them. You know, there's strings of protein, little bits that have flaked off from the inside of your eye, which is filled with liquid.
Oh.
So
right.
What I've noticed, what they look like to me, is if you look at bacterium under a microscope, they kind of resemble that, you know, when I do see them, but they're not that prominent. Like, I don't see them right now looking at the computer screen at you.
Yeah.
And I don't imagine that they're so big. I think if you've seen like a brick size shape floating across your lap, that it's time
two
to go see the ophthalmologist.
By 8 inches.
Yeah.
This is 16 square inches of shape. That's right. I can do math.
Yo.
16 square inches of shape moving across. It's like a shadow object.
Yeah.
Not a shadow person, but like a shadow object. It's just not something I've heard about before. Do you know anything like this from other stories that we've done over the years? Because I couldn't think of a common one.
My first assessment would be that it's not perhaps an object or a solid object.
Right.
Two things come to mind. Well, one is that it's the shape of some type of being or entity, you know what I'm saying? Rather than like, it's a bread box. It's
It's a buttered dish.
Right, right, right.
That is somehow mystical and spiritual and just kind of floats around. It is probably the shape, or as Roy Scheider says, in 2010, the year we make contact, a film I actually like, a follow-up to 2001, yes. A Space Odyssey, in that the object, right, which was 1 by 3 by 9, that black obelisk that is pervasive, yes, throughout the movie, what he says about it is a shape for something that has no shape. He's trying to describe what it might be, and they still don't know, but it could be a communication device, something like a beacon, a storehouse of knowledge, or an interface in this realm. And I like that idea, and that it's got these perfect proportions. You cannot hack into it. You cannot saw through it. It also emits a ear-piercing sound if you get too close, yes, to it. And it's a shape for something that is not shapeable or can take that kind of form in our current vibration of existence. So you have this, right, thing, which I don't know what it is, but like, is it just an object? Well, looking to it another perspective, what I found interesting and have still strived to attain, but cannot, it's just not happening for me. But past few years, I've been trying to practice astral projection, astral travel. Oh, right. And one thing, yeah, I think it's Dr. Steve G. Jones. He's a hypnotherapist. Mm-hmm. He does a meditative sleep practice for trying to initiate astral travel that I get my Mind Valley app. And what he describes is that once you enter this, you will see shapes that are in like a fourth dimension or that spiritual realm dimension that are there. It's very interesting. He just calls them solid structures or shapes. And he says, imagine if you are in your bedroom right now, you pick up a box and you move it and you leave the room, you come back later, the box is where you moved it. He said, these objects are like that, right, but they're invisible. You can pass through them in this astral travel state, but they are structures. And that's all he really describes about them. It's just like objects and structures, things. So I'm just dying to see what those are, what they look like. But he says, you'll probably see those. And he says, in that realm, you can interact or manipulate them. So again, I'm fascinated. Like, what is he talking about? I would like to, right, talk to somebody who has experienced that, or even Dr. Steve G. Jones himself, if we can make some kind of connection. So I've heard of objects like that, but the way he describes it in this other astral or even spiritual realm, they don't move on their own, that, right, they are just objects that are there and structures. I don't know who put them there, how they came to be, but they're just there. And he says, really, they're kind of inanimate objects. So those are my thoughts on what that square, that shadow thing was. My inkling is that it is something that is moves about on its own, right? It has, I don't know if it has full cognition, but it has some awareness of the space, and it purposely moved across the lap and across the bed and was doing its thing. And it could be the shape of a spirit. I don't know. We often hear of stories about people describing black misty masses, miasmas of spirit of some kind. And those are kind of shapeless and formless. They're just like a cloud, like a vape juice cloud from the other side that's black. And they just, right, kind of float around, do their own thing. But they're a shape for something that has or cannot take shape in this physical realm. But we've talked about this theory before, is that if you were in another state of mind, perhaps, would that shape appear as something else in your mind? And I always go back to Linda Godfrey's book, Monsters Among Us, I believe, or Beast of Bray Road. It's one of those two, because those are the two so far I've read of Linda's. But what, yeah, she describes, if you remember, is trying to find whatever this dog man thing is, this beast that is somewhat like a skinwalker or of that ilk. And they set up game cameras. Right. They leave out roadkill that they find. They set up the game camera and they come back. The roadkill's gone. They look at the SD card on there. Yes. And the only thing they see in the few frames before the roadkill disappears is a white mist, right, that kind of arises.
Right. And this is the one they'd left, like, kind of, it was a deer, right?
I think
they,
so,
left on, draped on like a barbed wire fence or something.
Something like that. By the,
like, wasn't it up off the ground? And then the mist comes in. And then when the mist is gone, it's gone.
Yeah. They're looking for some evidence, yeah, of a beast, something wild. They, yeah, want to see, okay, yeah, if this is a mountain lion, a cougar, a puma, what have you, that's big enough to carry something like that off, then what is it? And then we can rule that out. That's proper paranormal procedure, right? You want to rule out the obvious first. And so all they saw, though, was that white mist. Now, when people, I guess the ongoing theory here is that when you see a dog man, is it a mist of some sort that is forming that image of a half man, half beast kind of creature in your mind? Because we see with our brains.
Yeah.
Right? Your eyes are just the lenses. We often talk about that. And is that just the shapeless shape of something that has no shape in an objective view, which is the camera, right? The game cam is objective.
Right.
It just can pick up what's there. But when we see that, is that something else? And then we go back to our friend Max at the Boy Scout camp, remember? And he has that experience with a sort of shadow person. And he sees himself being attacked by a swirling black mist all around him. But his buddies from the Boy Scout camp, when they see him kind of writhing around in the...
Yeah, they're like 20 yards away from him or whatever.
And they said, who is that guy you're talking to? So they saw a guy, whereas he saw...
This brings up a super great point, by the way, and there's no way to know this. Milo the cat and Amy were looking at the same spot and the same object moving in the same direction and space. They know that they're both looking at the same thing. But what we can't know is what Milo was seeing and what Amy
was seeing. That's what I was saying at the beginning.
Milo is not going to be able to sit for an interview and be like, oh, yeah, so there's a black box. No, it's just going to be like, meow, 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 and you have no idea.
I want treats.
Maybe Milo saw a floating centipede or a creature or saw it for what it really was. Yeah. And then Amy was having some sort of screen memory or it had some sort of camouflage for her mentally.
Yeah.
Or for both of them. You know, I mean, because obviously genetically cats and people are like 99% the same anyway.
Yeah.
So you would think if there's some kind of trick going on, it would probably work the same way for both creatures.
Here's what we do know is that they both saw something anomalous in whatever way you want to say that. That usually does not happen. It wasn't a dust bunny floating through the air. They both saw something that is outside of the natural realm of experience for animal and humans. And that's why they both noticed and locked eyes and connected. And that's the other part of the story I love is just that they had this connection where it's like, okay, I know I'm a cat. I see a bunch of weird stuff. I'll stare at the wall, but we both saw that, right? Like
the
cat also wanted confirmation from the human who's supposed to be your protector.
Did you see that?
Yeah. It's like you're, and that's what makes me sad when I read stories about people who, and I understand this, I don't fault anybody for this, but when a child sees something really scary and the parent doesn't believe them. And I can understand that, but also I don't like to hear when they get punished for it.
Yeah.
Especially corporally, but it's a confirmation. And I think the better route is that you may not have to believe them, but we go back to Mr. not Mr. Bojangles. What's the Andy Griffith show?
Mr. McBeavy.
Mr. McBeavy, right.
The episode of the Andy Griffith show.
Yeah, we always talk about that because I think that Andy had the perfect response as an adult where he doesn't know exactly what his son, Opie, is telling him, but he believes that he saw something unusual.
Right.
And this was an unusual person in that he might get some facts wrong, but his son does not lie to him when he confronts him directly about it. So back to this case here, it's that they have this confirmation.
I just want to quickly say, in a few other episodes, Opie definitely lied.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. No, it's
part of the story.
Yeah, no that's a, well, listen, like, all kids do when you learn about that, it's one of those things. But what I'm saying is that they're telling you something. And when it's confirmed by both of them, then you really feel that. Like I said, once Andy actually met Mr. McBeavy, it's like, oh, I get it now. Okay.
Yes.
So I understand. It was just another point
of view.
Spoiler
alert. You can fast forward 30 seconds, but the spoiler alert for this ancient episode of Andy Griffith is that Mr. McBeavy is a lineman. So he's up in the trees with all this gear. And also he does a trick where he blows cigarette smoke out of his ears, which is all the stuff Opie was describing. And everybody was like, this kid is making it up. So
point being is that we have this connection of something that is unusual, confirmed by both. And the cat's not going to tell you, or if it sees something like just staring at a spot on the wall, you can't know what it's seeing, but I wish I could, because I would love to know what that perspective is. But getting back to what things are believable first, I love the idea of a stone house that is that old, but like that protected. I would love to live in a stone brick house that could take a 20 millimeter round. It's just something, or a cannonball back in the day, but just something that's that solid. And I could picture it perfectly how Amy describes that you can hear some sounds from the outside, but they're very muffled.
Right. That's a good point.
And you cannot mistake that for something coming down the hall. You know what the sound is coming from inside the house. And yes, you know, I've heard foxes, owls, all sorts of things. Fennec foxes especially make the weird human-like cry. But this was inside the house, and I doubt an animal got inside. Because the other thing is that if it's really an animal and Milo's that feisty and Milo runs down the hall to confront some animal that got in, raccoon, whatever, you're going to hear some, you're going to hear some cat fighting going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's going to be something rather than like, there's a bear down the hall. You might want to take care of that. The other thing I love is that, you know, Amy was saying they don't know what the response is, but I love the different, now that we've established that we've both seen something weird or heard something weird, my response as an animal is that you don't just throw the covers over your head and ignore it. Is that this intruder must be confronted because you cannot go to sleep. I feel the same way if I see a spider, a big old hairy spider on the wall above my bed. I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to dispatch the spider before I can rest rather than think, oh, they don't eat much, as people say, like, and just fall asleep because it's going to be on your face in the middle of the night. So something must be done. And that's my attitude about it. But everybody's different. And I, of course, would have gone down the hall to check that out because I'm on Milo's approach here. Milo's point of view was like, I need to know what that is before I just go to sleep. Because if there is something in the house, it must be dealt with. And so Amy's point of view was like, that's probably nothing. You know, it's whistling past the graveyard. Like, let's just go to sleep. Yeah. We're going to close the door and I'm sure it'll go away.
Paranormal apathy.
Which it did.
Yeah.
In a sense, you're right. In a version of that, it is kind of like, I don't really want to know what's making that sound. And also, Amy was right about this. I'm sure it'll go away, at least for a while. So, and it did.
Well, two things I'll say. Firstly, I was looking up while you were talking. I knew I had misstated it. We're only 90% genetically similar to cats. So I didn't want any geneticists to send us angry emails, which they probably wouldn't have. But then there's a 10% difference. I think it's chimpanzees or something that we're 99% similar to.
Okay, here's what I know just because I watched. It's a guy named Mark who is a zoologist, but it was a great special with National Geographic, I believe, where he goes to look for the Yeti. And so he gives a lot of those figures because up in the Himalayas, they find a pool of water, which nobody herds up there. There's no farming.
Oh, yes. I know
and
story,
no animals really get up there. Some do, of course, but it's very limited to just mountain goats, birds, this and that. They know the animals that are up there. And they know that no humans go up there because this is in conjunction with the local folks. And they take a sample. He brings along somebody who is a geneticist, and they take a sample of the water, and they strain it, which you can do for DNA. And what they find is that, there's some, I think there's some mountain goat DNA in there. That makes sense. There may or may not have been even like a bear DNA. I don't think so. I think the only other one that was significant is they found some creature that had 99% match to human DNA. And apes and other gorillas are 98%. So that's what I remember about their conclusion. What their finding was is that...
Why didn't you correct me when I said that thing about Milo the cat being
90%? Scott and I do this.
Don't let it slide.
No, we do this all the time. Is that and we always, in our minds, try to like...
we regret it.
Yeah, I should probably say something because that requires us to do a pickup later to correct it.
But I don't like to exaggerate for the sake of exaggerating.
No, and I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you picked that up. And but I thought, like, it's not worth correcting him on that. But my point being is that it's closer. Pigs are pretty close, as folks know. That's why you can harvest some pig organs that, you know, like heart parts and valves that might work in humans. Weirdly, we're very close to them. But as far as the great apes families go, I think we're about 97 to 98%, but nothing that we know of the other apes is 99%. So that suggests another type of creature that is unknown. That alone in itself is a major discovery, but it might suggest something that is Yeti-like. So that's science for you, folks. And when you say there's no proof, well, they found that. But as far as the story goes and what we know about whatever made that sound, for one, I would have checked that out. But also, it was inside the house. That's unmistakable. And what I do with all the stories mostly that we read here is that I find little nuances in the story that change the meaning or the significance of them. And it could be a little thing. Like, again, them both glancing, and which changes not the truthiness of the story or the verisimilitude. It is more so the experience and how much it says to me that this might be something unique and genuine. My point being, and I'm going to bring it up again, your dog's Lou's reaction to a noise I heard in your place. You even posted this one time. You were walking her and there was seemingly like a leaf just floating in midair.
Yes. And I have that on video.
Yeah. And it was just being suspended by one of those thick, ropey orb weaver spider strands.
Yes.
Spider web strands. And if you looked at it at a certain perspective, it looks like it's just floating. And I remember you saying, and you have it on video, like she just looks up like, well, that's weird. That leaf should either fall or blow to the side laterally, horizontally, but it's just seemingly kind of twisting up there by itself. Kind of like that video that's been making.
Yeah, everybody's freaking out about right now on the...
In Lou's case, there's a very mundane explanation that to Lou's mind is just like, ah, I guess it's magic. I don't know. And just, I got to poo. So that's the dog's mind. It's like, eh, okay, that's... There's nothing more that can be gained from more observation of this. And it's just kind of strange. Yes. I've never seen that before. And she just moves on. In the case of Lou, when I was dog sitting with her, because it also involves maybe a sound that came from outside. When you and I were discussing that, it's like, well, what could she have alerted to? Because as it happened, Lou would always like to sleep in the bed with you under the covers. That night, as it was kind of late, I think I just finished watching a movie, and it was like maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock, magic time. I heard this really loud crack, because what we're talking about here is a house settling, and a massive stone house that hasn't, they still make noises, I realize, but like how much more settling is it going to do over the next 100 years?
Yes.
Is that, also I wonder how much
you're talking about Amy's house. My house was not.
Yeah, no. Yes. I heard this massive crack and it's not a creak. It's not the house, you know, yeah, it gets hot in the valley and it cools off at night and that makes sounds, you know, your house is contracting. But I heard this loud crack, which I can only describe as, it was about as loud as snapping like a 2-inch dowel in half, like a wood crack, like that, like, whoa, what the, and that immediately got my attention. Not a movement from Lou. She is, I presume, already asleep under the covers, motionless. It's like, wow, that was loud. That's my first thought. And then it happened again, about like in exact intervals of about 2 or 3 seconds. Uh-huh. And it happened again. And then the thing is, I'm talking about perception here as to where things are in the house. It sounded like the cracks, and there was like maybe 5 of them. And it was getting closer, it sounded like, to the guest bedroom where I was, which is mid-hallway. So you have your living room, you have the hallway coming down, and like, what is coming? What is that? In my mind, it's right. Like... Because it's getting louder, it's getting closer, and it was like 5 in a row at fairly even intervals. Okay, that's not seemingly natural. That usually doesn't happen in that pattern that loudly and that precisely and with movement, or like it's either that or we have to get out because the house is falling down. And so I was alert. I was just kind of like looking out the bedroom door, which was open, and it finally stopped after about 5 or 6 cracks. I just kept staring at the open doors like, what's coming in? Because I knew your house was haunted, even though you don't want to admit it. But here's where I would describe as significant the order of events and reactions is that as it's getting closer, right? So you can kind of with your mind track the movement, like it's a walking pace or this and that. And after the last crack, it's like now it should be at the bedroom door. And like I said, Lou did not move a peep or, you know, utter a peep, did not stir at all until that last crack when that thing, whatever it was, should have been at the bedroom door. Then she bolts out from the covers and stares intently at the door. And then I didn't get scared. I was like, oh, we're going to see something. And it's like, I should have got the camera out. But like, I was waiting for something and I stared really hard. I tried to focus and unfocus my eyes and she just didn't move. She was just intently staring, you know, no hackles raised. It was just like, something's there.
Right.
And then that lasted for about a minute or two where she just motionless, just stared right at the door. And then she gave up and she went right back into the covers. And then I went to sleep. It's like, okay, Lou's, at least Lou thinks it's gone. Whatever, whatever that was, it's moved on. I can now sleep. That's my point about the story, is that a confirmation, a resolution of some kind happened with an animal that I trust more than my own senses, saying, like, it's all clear, all's clear, go ahead, go back to sleep. She's going back to sleep.
Right.
My point about that is that it's the reaction, like, she, at the first crack, okay, if she thought, like, oh, Scott and Em are home, I want to go run and see them, she would, at the first two cracks, if she thought that was the door or people entering, she might have bolted out of bed. It wasn't, right. Like I said, the timing was just perfect as such that it would, she reacted when whatever that was would have been at the bedroom door.
Right.
And the way she did it, and that, like I said, it wasn't scared, it wasn't barking.
Yeah.
That was different. You know what I'm saying? Everything was different about that reaction. And so putting all that together and the way it unfolded, that's what makes me think that there was something really happening. There was a screech. There was a black floating ghost box, whatever it was.
Yeah.
That they both saw. That was anomalous. And that's all I can say about it, you know, but I would love to ghost hunt in that house and see what's up.
Well, the thing I keep turning over with this one is Milo the cat.
Yeah.
The screech, a sound like that in the woods at 2 a.m, my mind goes to an owl or a fox or something like that. And I suspect Amy's does too, from the way she presented the story. But the second night, again, is different because of Milo.
Yeah.
The small, like you said about Lou, the small defined shape traveling one path across the room. And both Milo and Amy are following it with their eyes, their head movements, their body language the whole way. So they both know they're seeing the same thing. We talk a lot on this show about how human memory can be not exactly trustworthy, but that's what we keep liking about Milo. Milo's, she's not got a story she's trying to tell. She's not hoping it's a ghost.
She's selling books.
Yeah. Yeah. Milo's, she's just in it to make money on books. She saw what she saw. She got off the bed. I don't know if that proves anything, but it's the detail we can't quite get past with this one in terms of it being something mundane.
And one final detail we didn't really talk about, which is another tell for me, the cigarette smoke.
That's right. That's right. And that's an interesting factor. And Amy even says herself, well, maybe that's lingering in the insulation or something like that. But that's always an unusual thing when you smell that. And we, you know, at the Kent stage, I believe there was folks who would smell the cigar smoke from a ghost there.
Coffee.
In Kent, Ohio. But anyway, yes, and coffee. So it sounds to me like there's a little something up there. The floating dark shape, though, that's probably the thing that would freak me out. But I'm sure the screaming sound would freak me out. Even if it was an owl, it's like, why does it sound like it's inside? I wouldn't be into that either.
Yeah,
I would have to, like, do some exploring. Anyway, Amy, thank you so much for sending your story into the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolton. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of the show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
This episode of Astonishing Legends is brought to you by Alloy Health. Mysteries aren't just found in old legends. Sometimes they're in your own life, like when menopause symptoms show up. Hot flashes, long nights without sleep, and brain fog can make even the everyday feel strange. Nearly half of women wait years before seeking help, often feeling lost or dismissed by doctors. But menopause doesn't have to be a mystery you solve alone. Alloy is an online platform built by women who have been through it. You'll get connected with a menopause-specialized doctor who listens and creates a treatment plan just for you. Relief can start in hours, not weeks. Join the 95% of women who tried Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code SUMMER20. Your menopause-specialized doctor will tailor your treatment to your exact needs. Plus, you get unlimited messaging with your doctor. Head to myallo.com and use code SUMMER20 to get $20 off.